He's a rehab doctor from Chicago.
She's an emergency medicine doctor from the Twin Cities.
Together, we're examining the health equity emergency.
Inviting voices for change without the cue cards.
I'm Dr. Carrie Haley.
I'm Dr. Stephen Jackson.
And this is Off the Charts.
Well, welcome to our show. We're very excited. We're very honored to have our guest here today, who's going to be speaking to us and educating us on how we honor different food cultures. I have with me Munir Malimasak, and I have Dr. Ying Yang, who's going to be, as I said, educating us and teaching us a little bit more about the different food cultures. Welcome.
Thank you.
Do you want to maybe take us back a little bit? So tell us a little bit about the program itself, the origins of it, and kind of the thought process behind bringing food and cultural sensitivities into how we are delivering our care here in the hospital.
Absolutely. This has been a project that has been long in the making, long in the dreaming, really. I think I've been thinking about this project for a really long time since I came to Health Partners, and mainly because of my past experience of doing primary care with our patients with diabetes and other chronic diseases that come from different food cultures. And they often get referred to diabetes education or nutrition education, and then they come back and they say, that doesn't work because none of the food they show me on those pictures look like the food I eat at home. And so I think it really was out of that experience and also just the opportunity to work with our expert panel, our diabetes and vascular expert panel folks, to really look at our health equity disparity data and see that though we have made tremendous strides over the last several years, we continue to have an equity gap. So I think that sort of two forces met together. And fortunately, this project that is born out of passion also met with some data, and a lot of really great people came together and decided that they would let us fly. And so we got a couple of small grants to fund this project. And here we are.
Can you tell me more about the beginnings, like who was involved and who really needed to be like core people to make this program successful?
I would say that I was probably the brain or the inspiration behind the project. And then I influenced our chair, the expert panel, to let us form a subcommittee out of the diabetes and vascular expert panel. And so our quality and analytics team, Terry Mittendorf and Julie Cashman, who is now retired from our organization, were really instrumental in that. And then they got our diabetes education team, Aaron DeRosa, and then our nutrition leaders involved with that, and having lots of different sessions of conversation. And then we wrote Tracy in from patient education. And now it's really a big group of our diabetes education team, our nutrition team, our patient education team, as well as our quality team. And we have several of our primary care clinicians involved, including Munera, who is here with me today.
That's awesome. So it seems like born out of a passion and a really good idea. What does the program itself look like? Like what are the pieces of it? What are the things that you're doing in the clinic or in the hospital, in the community?
This project, what happened was we brought three different cultures together. We had meals together. We asked, how does your food look like? Things that what they thought of a real, what does diabetes even look like to them? Or who prepares their food? How can they make their needs known to their providers? Like just looking at overall what language means for them, mm-hmm. and just getting their perspective first and talking to community members, us eating with them and eating their cultural foods. We had food from the Hmong community. We had Ethiopian food and Somali food. And all those community members were there. And just to get their perspective and making them the center of what we wanted to change before, we had an idea of what we wanted to really, we knew we were working with food. And but like they came up with the concept and we came up with them and just worked through it, which was beautiful. And here we are.
We know from evidence that when we have culturally responsive diabetes education that are specific to the culture and the food cultures, that that actually improves care in outcome like A1C control, glycemic control, as well as efficacy, so self-empowerment for them to take care of their chronic diseases at home. So we knew that from our literature search, because we know that the one single food culture that has been the, sort of the predominant doesn't really fit every patient population. And so we wanted to kind of build a template. So one part is really evidence-based, and then the other is really community engagement that Monera spoke to. And that marrying the two is so important because that's really only the only way that I know how to get really culturally informed and culturally responsive education, right? To really know what your the end user of your education expects and what how they learn best and what speaks to them, and then using the science and the data that we have to really drive that work. And so what we've created is actually a really fantastic repertoire of videos, audio recordings, and written materials. And I'll have Monera talk a little bit about, you know, just building off of the work that we've done with IHI, the Learning Lab Open Faces project that she was involved with earlier, in terms of just learning from what the communities expect in terms of education and how that informed our decisions to create that repertoire of work that we've done.
I think most of the time we forget that we think something is translated in that person's language. We think that patient can read that, right? Mm-hmm. I had a patient, and this will stay with me forever. It was written in Somali, but we had a little QR code on the side that you can scan, and it turns into, you can watch an audio YouTube page, like video, and that explains to you what the care is, what diabetes actually is, how do you take care of it, how, all of that stuff. And she goes, thank you so much. Because for us, if she would receive it in English, her kids would read it for her. Mm-hmm. If she would get it in Somali, her kids do not read Somali. She doesn't read Somali, but she didn't want to tell her kids that. So for the longest, we would give her a care plan and write it in Somali and give it to her. And she would take it home and just put it away. But now she felt like she was empowered to take part of her care. And she's like, I'll watch this video. And how excited she was to watch this video made me change in how I talk to patients. I go into the room and I start with that now and then just go through it with them and tell them, this is how you use it. This is what it is. Just having those conversations. Something that happened, another thing was the menu. We had two dates on there. And I think we heard back that it's supposed to be three dates. And we went back and ended up changing that and taking that menu into a patient's room and showing them and how they, myself, Somali, how I identified with the menu and how it made me feel myself just was the icing for this project. And when we did the IHI, something that came up a lot was language barrier, that being a barrier in how, why they're not partnering up with their providers, why they're not understand, or why that term of, oh, they're not compliant or they're not following the plan is because that was a big barrier. So now we were able to get rid of that because now they can listen, they can watch different formats, pictures, all of that stuff. And another thing was just making sure that we wanted other people to use it and understand that. Now we've got another rollout coming out where we explain it to clinicians, how to use it, how do you partner up with your patient, and from there on.
So we have a handout that often use we often use in diabetes education, nutrition education. It's the American Diabetes Association My Plate, and we basically adapted that because when we did our listening sessions with our community members, we showed them that, right, and say, okay, you know, like this is what we use to teach, and how does this come across to you? And that's when they pointed out to us that, well, I don't recognize that food. I don't recognize this food.
Mashed
I don't
potatoes.
Recognize this food, right? Like, you can teach me how to portion mashed potatoes, but I'm going to go home and eat rice. Mm-hmm. You can right. teach me how to portion whatever fruit, but I'm going to go home and eat mango mm-hmm. or dates or whatever. So they can't translate that because it's such an abstract thing for them, right? Mm-hmm. So we took that and we adapted it into, we dubbed it called My Meal instead of My Plate. And so we have a full 11 by 14, you know, kind of foldable page that has, it's basically a picture of a plate divided into like three quadrants and basically shows you what kind of foods fit into those quadrants of a plate or a bowl that would support their diabetes or their chronic disease care. And what we did was we substituted those foods with their culture foods. And so we would have that in English and then in Somali, and then we have a Hmong version, and then hopefully we'll have more versions as we continue. Our diabetes education nutrition team are using that currently, and then some of our clinicians are using that currently. We just got the Hmong version produced, and I see a lot of Hmong patients in my practice. And so the other day I got a chance to use it for the first time in a patient who has diabetes, who is actually very well controlled, but mm-hmm. he wanted to lose weight. And he really was wanting to engage in how he can change some of his food. And I pulled out this version for him, and he just like lit up, and he really engaged with it. He's like, oh, that's our food. Like, I recognize that meal. I recognize the ingredients. And, oh, that's really how you can portion that. And this is, you know, he didn't understand a lot of how to do portions, how to balance that plate, right? So it was satisfying for me to know that all this work with all these people and all the energy connected with the patient, and that's going to help empower him to go home and take the little information, the 20-minute session that he and I had, to go home and act on that. And, you know, that was such an empowering moment that all that hard work was totally worth it.
That is,
and yeah. I think a lot of us want to build that trust with our patients.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
That is, if I see you, I hear you, and here's a menu that looks like food that you eat, I think that's one of the best ways that we can connect with our patients and build that trust right there.
When we think about health and medicine, so much of it is in our homes and what we're eating and what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And to be able to tailor it to people who then they can actually see their foods and see how that reflects in how they cook or how they prepare or how they portion things. Mm-hmm. Maybe really can, like, I can see the connection of how that can really actually help people manage their disease better rather than just being told a bunch of things.
Yeah, I think
integrating both sides of the how you heal and manage disease on both sides, both like the clinical, here's some medicines or here's some things, but also here's real changes with your food.
Exactly.
That you can do.
Exactly. Because I think that, you know, one of the things that we also found with our listening sessions with our patients is that many of our patients from these different food culture communities, they are really afraid of medicine, right? And, you know, medicines cause potential side effects. It's expensive. It's confusing. They don't really know how to manage, you know, them. And maybe it interacts with other things. But food is so fundamental to who they are. You know, it's such a personal thing, mm-hmm. right? And when you can actually lead with food rather than leading with medicine, it goes a long way to build that trust that Monera was just referring to. And it really lets them know that you get them, right? Mm-hmm. You get them. And this is why my patients who are Hmong drive from other cities to see me, right?
Right.
Even though they probably pass like 10 different clinics along the way. And I'm like, why are you here? Because you get me, right?
Yes.
You get me. Even I have a funny story that, you know, I have three Hmong physicians in my clinic, but one of them perhaps is not quite as fluent. And so one of my Hmong patient, actually his patients, the other day came and started seeing me. And I'm like, you've been seeing this other doctor for a really long time. Like, why are you changing? It's like, well, my doctor still needs an interpreter and you just get it. And it's, I'm like, okay. So that whole thing of me walking in and just getting it is so important to our patients, to creating that trust. And food is such a fundamental thing, I think, that we found in our cultures. Munir and I often joke about, are you sure we're not related somehow? Because our people are so similar in so many ways, you know, with
how we
approach it.
Well, like food is a great gathering spot, right?
Yeah,
like it's a great way to connect with people. I know, you know, there's programs out there where you get to share your food, your culture, and people love bringing that and love leading with that.
Yeah.
So to be able to integrate it into taking care of themselves and their health is just so awesome.
Yeah. And I think hearing no, like you can't have rice. And that's one of the things that I know from, if you're from Somalia, rice is really important. We have it often. And if I went in and I saw a diabetes educator and she said, you cannot have rice, that I'm like, okay.
I tell our diabetes educators all the time, like, if you tell my patients that they can't have rice, you might as well just cut their hands off.
Right.
Right. Because rice is life for us, you know, and rice is life for like what many, many, many cultures across the world.
Yeah.
So we used to nickname our little group White Rice is Okay.
Let's talk more about rice. What are some misconceptions about rice that are out there?
That if you have diabetes, you can't have rice. That is a big misconception out there, right? And that's what our patients hear all the time. We still hear some of our educators and some of our clinicians say, oh, I tell them to eat brown rice. The thing about brown rice is that sometimes people don't really understand brown rice, at least from the Hmong culture. Mm-hmm. They don't understand that brown rice sometimes is looked upon as food for the less fortunate. And so when you're in this country, you know, we like to think of ourselves as, well, maybe we're doing better, right? We're not in an agrarian society anymore where we have to like really work hard for our food. We can buy our food now. And so we'll eat white rice, which is better, right? But we know that, you know, brown rice has more nutritional value than white rice. But because of some of those social stigmas that are culturally relevant, you tell people, go eat brown rice. That's a problem, right? They might smile at you and say, sure, but they're going to go home and not do
they're
it.
They're not doing it.
And then they'll just substitute white rice. And, you know, you wonder why they come back and their diabetes is the same, you know?
Or they don't come back.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Or they just don't come back.
Exactly.
Then they come see me in the emergency department.
Right. We are really, as much as we love you, Carrie, we don't want our patients to come see you. We want to keep our patients at home healthy.
Yes.
So you guys have brought a lot of materials here, and how does a clinician use the materials that you guys have presented to us today?
We have lots of different materials, and these materials are really designed for our clinicians as well as our diabetes educators and our nutritionists. So first, I think that when we first approach our patients who have diabetes, maybe it's brand new diagnosis, or maybe somebody who has never really experienced a food, you know, culturally appropriate care, I often ask the patient what they know about their diabetes or what they know about their diagnosis, and then basically meet them where they're at. And if they don't know much, or if they have questions about food, I pull out this dandy, you know, handout that we have that basically has all of their foods on a plate and divided into a proper proportion that would support their diabetes care. And because this is designed to be culturally appropriate for them, they will immediately recognize their food. And both Munira and I have had experiences where our patients would light up and immediately connect to this and say, oh, and then they start asking questions. And then, you know, that awkwardness is gone, you know, and then we start having conversations about, okay, well, this is what I usually like to eat. You know, even if that particular food may not necessarily be on this plate, they start talking about it and then we can kind of fill in, right? So that's one way that we can connect with them is we can give them this handout, start it as a conversation piece in the clinic. They can go home with it. They can take notes. They can practice using it. And then, you know, I often tell them, come back and maybe tell me how you've used this and how this has changed the way that you eat, right? The other way that we have for clinicians to interact with our patients is we have this sheet that has QR codes that we can put in the after visit summary electronically through our electronic health records by using dot phrases that already automatically bring it in and they could show their family at home. Or right in the clinic, if they're curious, they could just scan it, you know, right away. It's a bunch of QR codes that leads them to some videos and audio recordings of, for example, what to expect when you are sent to a diabetes educator. What does that visit look like? Or what does pre-diabetes look like? So this will provide them with just really short snippets of education that is mm-hmm. consumable and is done in their language, both in audio and video. And it lives on the my partner's YouTube page. So it's not protected under my you know, like the portal, the patient mm-hmm. portal. It's a stable URL, but they can access it really easily.
This is like the epitome of equity, which is kind of what we talk about on this podcast and how we're kind of giving our patients, you know, exactly what they need. And I can imagine the pleasant surprise when you pull this out, like, oh, that's my food in my language. Talk about instant trust builder.
I remember the first time I pulled it out for a patient, she just like takes it out of my hand. And like, this was just a sample one. So I couldn't give it to her. I just wanted to get her perspective. And she hugs it. She's like, this is for us. This was made with us in mind. I was like, yeah, it was made with the community. We came up with it together. And for my community that does not eat a lot of vegetables, this was a good conversation starter when it came to how much vegetables are important and fruits are important and how do you integrate that in a meal and how does that even look like for you? I love that it's pictures that they can look at and just work with.
Yeah, the other tool that we have is we surveyed our clinicians, our primary care clinicians, as well as our endocrinologists before we started this project about what are some of the impediments that you guys face as you work with patients? And what are, you know, obstacles that, you know, patients say that why they won't go to see the diabetes mm-hmm. educator? And why I harp so much about seeing the diabetes educators, because it's really a partnership between a primary care clinician and our diabetes education team, because we have really good evidence to show that when we actually work in partnership, we produce better results for our patients, right? Our patients get to goal faster, they stay at goal longer, and that's really ultimately what we want. And so that's why that partnership is so important. But a lot of times our patients are reluctant to go because they feel like, I know you. I trust you. Why are you handing me off to someone else? Yeah. And we really want to impart that trust to our partners in the diabetes education and nutrition team.
And it was not like just passing the buck. It was that warm handoff mm-hmm. where you're saying, I trust this person. And this is someone that can help you. You'll have longer time with. And everything gets sent back to me and I review it, right? Just reinforcing that education too beforehand.
Yeah, so we also, because of that survey, we also produced a tip sheet for our clinicians to learn how to have those conversations with our patients, right? Because sometimes I think our clinicians who may not do this work a lot or may not see these kinds of patients a lot, they're afraid to offend people and they may not ask the right questions, right? Mm-hmm. And so then we have some tips on how to actually just be vulnerable and just say, hey, I often hear from some of my other patients that, you know, they have this experience going to see a diabetes education session before. What's been your experience? You know, just being really honest and open about it and creating that space for our patients to speak back. It's been really well received by folks who have seen it and have used it so far.
Yeah. And I think that's something that we did intentional is knowing that to bring that support person in and letting the family or the patient know, hey, you know, you can bring someone with you, whoever that does cooking in the house or who does grocery shopping.
You know, between the marriage between food and health and then just all the ways that you're doing the work within this project, I think is great because, you know, then you're hitting so many people with many different angles and different methods that maybe one of them will stick and one of them will fit and work with them.
Yeah, I love that because, and speaking of that, I'm going to shamelessly plug because since both of you work in the hospital base, we recently got the videos onto the menu for the hospitals too. And so, because sometimes our patients do end up in your hospitals mm-hmm. and that's also, sometimes it's a brand new diagnosis, sometimes it's an exacerbation and we want to take every opportunity that we have them as captive audience to be able to educate them. And so We have those videos in the inpatient service so that they can go ahead and use that. And I think we haven't gotten much feedback yet in terms of what that impact is, but we anticipate that if it hits like our ambulatory side, that it would be helpful.
There are studies that have been published that talk about how when there is trust, there's like compliance with the treatment mm-hmm. plan, compliance mm-hmm. with the overall plan of care. And I can just imagine this having such a greater impact than even what we can see, you know, outside of the clinic visit, talking about somebody going home excited and explaining it to the family. And then now the uncle who's never gone to the doctor now wants to go to the doctor because mm-hmm. I hear the hospital hears me and sees me now, you know, yes. This is great.
Yeah, I really hope that that is true. And there are, the last time I looked, there's probably about 113, you know, sort of randomized trials out there that talks about culturally responsive education for diabetes. And we know that a lot of those studies are actually done in the Hispanic population mm-hmm. Some in African-American populations, not as much in the Hmong and the Somali population specifically, but, you know, those data should be emerging. Mm-hmm. And we hope to be contributing to that soon. But that's exactly right, Steve, in that we know that the data tells us that when people trust us, when people understand and identify with the education and the care that we give them, that they are more engaged and they feel more empowered to be able to have that self-efficacy to do self-care. And that leads to better glycemic control and hopefully better outcomes in terms of decrease in complications, which is ultimately what we want.
That's what we want.
That is the goal. Yeah.
Especially in the Somali and Hmong communities, we learn oral, whatever that we learn, we're teaching other people and sharing with our community members. I think this, something like this, I can see it having a big impact on a whole family and even communities.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've been sharing this with, so I run a nonprofit organization in the community called Hmong Healthcare Professional Coalition. And we're a grassroots organization that do like health education and health fairs and stuff in the Hmong community. And I shared the Somali version of this and they're like, where's the Hmong version? Where's the Hmong version? So they're super excited that to be able to have that because we did this most recent health fair that we did. We did it in partnership with American Heart Association and actually Health Partners was a co-sponsor of that health fair as well. They gave me blood pressure cuffs. Thank you very much, the stroke program. They had like food, food wheel, right? And when I was doing the education for our those community members, they're like, but I don't eat that. That's mm-hmm. not the kind of food that we put on our plate. And I'm like, I know, it's coming. Just wait.
Well, thank you very much for being our guest once again. I love this program. Thank you for sharing it and being so passionate about it because I think we can all agree like food is a huge driver. And I think this is going to make huge, huge waves.
Thank you, Carrie. And I just want to have a special shout out to our Park Nicollet Foundation who provided some of the mini grants for this project and also our government and community relation Pahua Yang's program because they provided the initial grant to fund this project. So I'm really appreciative of their help.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Off the Charts is a production of Health Partners and Park Nicollet.
It is recorded by Jimmy Bellamy with creative by Peggy Arnson, Tina Long, Tim Myers, and Jeff Jondahl.
Production services provided by Matriarch Digital Media.
Our theme music is by Ryan Eich.